Josh Easton here, Israel Uncensored, the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. It is the 20th of March, 2017. Hope you're doing well in your part of the world. I am here in Jerusalem at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs with my main man, Dan Diker, frequent guest on the show, Senior Project Director, Program to Counter BDS and Political Warfare at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, the JCPA. I'm here, privileged to be here in his office in the Katamon area of Jerusalem. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back on Israel Uncensored.
Thanks so much. A lot of news over the last 48 hours in regard to Israel security. A lot of the information which you deal with here at the JCPA, reports of at least two strikes by Israel against several Syrian targets. The reports indicate they're mixed, really. One report indicates that Israel was possibly targeting a weapons transfer by the Iranians via Syria to Hezbollah. Another report indicating that Israel took out a senior commander, actually an Iranian, trying to set up some form of a command post in western Syria, just over the border, over the Golan border in the north. So a lot of activity over the last 48 hours. The code red alert going off in the Jordan Valley, missiles flying. The Syrians saying that they shot down an Israeli jet, Israel denying that. All this stuff going on. Dan, what can you tell us here Monday morning, the latest from the situation in a very, very tense northern Israel?
Well, what's most important to bear in mind, Josh, is that this is an Iranian warfare act against Israel. Iran has been at war with Israel since 1979. Many people in the West don't realize that, but that what we face as the state of Israel up in the north is an Iranian race for complete supremacy in the neighboring countries that surround Israel. And so when we talk about a Syrian, you know, a problem in terms of the passage on Syrian territory of Iranian manufactured weaponry to the Iranian terror proxy Hezbollah, this is an Iranian act of war that is taking place in Syria. And as we know, Syria is an Iranian client state. So it's a very serious development that Israel has been dealing with, not only now, but over the past few years. There have been, you know, 16, 17 strikes in Syria of these Iranian weapon shipments to its terror proxy Hezbollah to try to create a strategic and some even say existential threat to Israel right over its northern border.
You have a situation now. Syria itself has been in a civil war for, I guess, almost 5.5 years or so. Why now the attention here? Again, you mentioned it's Iran, but why the attention on Israel? They're so busy over there fighting the Assad regime, fighting the Sunnis, and then you have so many different elements. You have the ISIS element. Why would the situation divert now to a threat against Israel? They have their hands full up there, don't they?
They do have their hands full, Josh. You've asked the key question, and an approach to answering the question is called Russia. Russia and Israel have been in intensive meetings in order to work out a coordination mechanism where, in order to avoid any kind of possible mistaken armed conflict or conflagration between the two countries. Since the U.S. retreat from the Middle East and particularly from the former Obama administration's contraction and a retreat from the Syrian ground, you have, of course, the Russians having filled the security vacuum. And Israel's now in a situation in which the Russians have not prevented these types of armed shipments from moving across Syria into the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon. And the fear among Israeli security echelons is that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and its terror proxy Hezbollah are stationing tens of thousands of troops and rockets in Syria, so that Israel would face a two-front war in its north, one, Lebanon, and state number two, north, would be Syria. In addition to the fact that in Israel's south, in Gaza, you have a return of the Iranian weapons and training and financing to the Hamas. So Israel's looking around at it being surrounded by Iran on three different areas and territories around Israel. So the Russians play now a major role in trying to, from Israel's point of view, in the need in the north to prevent Iranian penetration and passage of these weapons. And that is where, to answer your question directly, a very serious development could occur where Israel and Russia could get into some sort of armed conflict because of mistaken calculations, which would be a very serious development here in the Middle East.
So you're saying even though their hands are tied and they're fighting their own battle in the north, and you'd mentioned the south as well, it's because of the Russian involvement that they're able to shift their focus on Israel at this point.
That's right. They have to shift their focus on Israel, actually, because the latest development is very important to keep this in mind. Israel had struck without taking any sort of credit, without taking any responsibility publicly over the last 3 to 4 years in Syria. And now, because the Syrians launched an anti-missile system at Israeli planes, Israel used the Arrow anti-missile system, which is a joint U.S.-Israel project, against those missiles, so that it had to come out publicly and announce that it had flown one of these defensive sorties in order to destroy the Iranian weapons Hezbollah's hands via Syria. So the fact that everything has sort of come out of the closet for the first time in these periodic operations is what caused the Russians to have to call Israel's ambassador in Moscow for a clarification. So there has been sort of an uptick in the seriousness of these types of terror actions and Israeli responses because of the fact they've been forced to come out of the closet, so to speak, and therefore it puts the Russians and the Israelis in an uncomfortable public position, one opposite the other.
Yeah, you even had our Prime Minister Netanyahu meeting with Putin last week in Russia. The commentators this morning, you mentioned the Arrow system. Some of the commentators this morning were going back and forth debating whether or not Israel should have used such an advanced system as the Arrow in order to shoot down these anti-plane missiles, which were used by the Syrians. I guess for some reason, you can explain it to me perhaps, it seems controversial that Israel used such an advanced weapon system. Why was it necessary? People are asking. Some are saying it was. Other military experts are saying, no, Israel didn't have to go that far to use the Arrow, which apparently was heard all the way to Jerusalem when the interception took place, sirens going off in the Jordan Valley. From what you know about the Arrow system, was it necessary for Israel to use it to shoot down these rockets or missiles, which were actually targeting Israeli planes? They weren't trying to target, from what I know, they weren't trying to target Israeli civilians in Israel itself, but the missiles were headed this way, and therefore the Arrow was used. What's your take on this, I guess, apparent controversy in Israel using the system at this juncture?
Let's answer your specific military question this way by enlarging the aperture of the question. The Arab world looks at Israel's air force as being the next most dangerous thing to Allah and his messenger Muhammad. And that very useful and important deterrent effect on the enemy has to be maintained at all costs. If there was a downing of an Israeli plane, that would break the psychology of deterrence that the Israeli Air Force has successfully created among all of its enemies, and for sure the Iranians are also terrified of Israel's Air Force. And therefore, at all costs, Israel must maintain that deterrent. So far be it from me to tell the Israeli Air Force and the military echelons what type of means to use in order to maintain that Israeli deterrence. But that's the key point. I think as we move further into this very tense situation now, because of the chessboard is full of different players, and Israel and the Russians are the king and the queen, if you will, in this constantly moving chessboard. And there has to be the tightening of the coordination measures and mechanisms to help these two powers, who are friends, avoid one another. Of course, the Russians have a very, very complex presence themselves in Syria. On the one hand, maintaining support for the Assad regime in order to protect Russia from very, very dangerous Sunni insurgents in Moscow. As well as around the country. So that is there as one of their interests. And then they're expanding their presence in Tartus, in their command and control center, as well as on the Syrian coast. So the Russians look like they're in this for the long haul, and therein really lies the danger, because Israel is saying, well, if they're in this for the long haul, which Israel in the meantime is going along with, it means that the Russians need to play a much more active role in preventing these types of cross-land balance-breaking weapons transfers that could be very dangerous for Israel.
The focus on the north. At the same time, you yourself just a few minutes ago mentioned Gaza, Hamas controlling Gaza, Iran sponsoring Hamas in Gaza. And over the last several weeks and months, there's been more and more talk about the potential of more Hamas tunnels existing today. I don't know the exact amount, but tunnels existing, Hamas at work digging tunnels, getting ready for the next potential operation. Several people who I've spoken with over the last several days, including members of the intelligence community who I cannot name and others, are mentioning, I guess publicly, and you just mentioned it yourself, the potential of another round of Hamas versus Israel in southern Israel. We've seen a trickling of rockets over the last several days. There was a report of a rocket yesterday. Then they said it was a false alarm. Then others said, well, it's a false alarm. It actually means that a rocket was perhaps fired but landed in Gaza. Hence, they call it a false alarm. We see Hamas testing rockets, firing them into the ocean, getting into the sea, the Mediterranean, getting prepared for the next round. In your opinion, from what you know, do you believe that we are going to have another hot summer when it comes to Hamas down in Gaza?
Well, it's that is a $64,000 question, as they used to say on the American Game Show. It's not sure that this summer, the summer of 17, will be a summer of conflict. The Hamas has been deterred by Israel's very aggressive counterstrike in 2014. Against the Hamas, which, of course, was the third major campaign since 2009, as you and I know. The problem with Hamas is that they are not the only ones in charge in Gaza. They have overall control, but there are Salafist groups, these radical Sunni groups, the Al-Qaeda and the ISIS offshoots, the cells that identify those. And those cells in Gaza are also connected with ISIS and Al-Qaeda cells in northern Sinai, which upsets the Egyptians and threatens the Egyptians at the same time. So the security situation in the south has become extremely volatile and complex for Israel and its Egyptian neighbor. So while Hamas may want to avoid some sort of conflagration, and by the way, the Iranians want to avoid any conflagration in the south, and they are pressuring as well the Hamas, because the Iranians realized their last major mistake was the 2006 war up in Lebanon, in which Lebanon attacked Israel prematurely, according to the Iranians. And finally, that had been admitted at the time by the Iranian employee Nasan Khosrallah, who is the Secretary General of the Hezbollah. So the leaderships of the Iranian terror proxies in Gaza and in the north in Hezbollah, that's assuming that you want to call the Sunni group Hamas an Iranian terror proxy, but they certainly work in very close tandem and under direction from Iran these days. Whether they want to break the tense ceasefire, what they call a hudna, and sort of try to re-engage, draw Israel back into Gaza, because they know that if they draw Israel back into Gaza, there's going to be a lot of public support for smashing the leadership of the Hamas and possibly for a limited Israeli takeover of the Gaza Strip until a more amenable type of a group can be worked with and cooperated with in Gaza. Some call it a weakened Hamas. Others are calling for the return of the PLO into Gaza, which is a long shot. But nonetheless, the Hamas had been sent very strong messages that if they want war, they're probably going to get a lot more than they bargained for.
We're going to switch gears here. Again, this is Israel Uncensored with Josh Haston, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. I'm here with Dan Diker, Senior Project Director, Program to Counter BDS and Political Warfare at the JCPA, Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. In your title is one of your responsibilities is to counter BDS. What can you tell us in terms of the latest initiatives, activities, things going on from where you're sitting here in Jerusalem in terms of fighting the BDS? There's so many different initiatives out there. At the same time, you have so many different pro-BDS groups. Unfortunately, a lot of them Jewish or claim to be Jewish in the U.S. and elsewhere, trying to do harm to Jews here in Israel, whether they live in Judea and Samaria, whether they live in Tel Aviv. Tell me something that you are working on now here in your capacity in order to counter BDS. Where do we stand with that?
Josh, the bottom line on BDS is that it is a violent terrorist-supporting activity. It is not a peaceful, grassroots, student-driven, mostly in the West type of grassroots activity. In order to allow for the establishment of a peaceful Palestinian state living in good neighborly relations next to Israel. That's what some in the West believe BDS is. Our work at the Jerusalem Center has been and continues to be over the past years and continues to be now to unmask BDS and convey the message that BDS has the exact same goals as the Hamas does in terms of its intention to cause the destruction, the implosion, the unraveling of the nation state of the Jewish people. It has parallel strategies with anti-Semitism. It includes anti-Semitism. We're seeing a lot of very similar activity between the BDS activists on campuses in North America and anti-Semitic incidents, as reported by Amcha and Professor Tammy Benjamin, who's done some terrific work in the California schools as well as nationally. And at the same time, we want to convey the message by unmasking BDS that the leadership of the BDS movement is very much rooted in Ramallah and in the Palestinian-controlled areas. I would direct some of your listeners to the BDS Unmasked book, which I authored with a prologue by former intelligence assessment head General Yossi Cooperwasser. Just go to jcpa.org and look for the link to the BDS Unmasked book. You can get the whole thing on PDF, and you can see how BDS is unmasked by the Jerusalem Center. And that we are trying to uncover and expose the truth about the strategic danger that BDS poses to the Jewish world, to Israel, and really to the West, because terrorism begins with incitement to murder. We know that from the Second World War. We know that from the history of Islamic terrorism. And that is exactly why BDS is a terror complement or a terror supplement. And it has to be wiped out from the top to the bottom. The final thing I'll say is that what we're doing at the center is working with Palestinians and working with South Africans in order to break two false models of libel and slander. One is that we are exposing Palestinians that know that BDS is a destructive force towards for them, for their economic and political future. We will be issuing that book in the coming weeks called BDS and the Palestinian Political Economy. Second thing we're doing here is to work with South African former BDS leaders in South Africa who realize that BDS and Israel as apartheid slander is absolutely nothing more than a slander and a libel, and they are working with us in order to break that lie.
It's ironic that some of those who legitimize BDS in Judea and Samaria, some people call it the West Bank. Of course, I don't use that terminology. It's ironic that they claim that it's legitimate to boycott, divest, and sanction the so-called settlers and the settlements, terms I don't use, but it'll be the Arabs, if they're successful, it'll be those Arabs living in those areas. They'll be the first ones who are hurt. They will be the first ones who are out of jobs if these people who claim they're only BDSing the settlements, we're not BDSing Israel, it'll be those Arabs who are unemployed first as a result of their actions. They're claiming to help them. They're actually hurting them.
Well, they really are claiming to hurt them, and I want to emphasize the point that you've just brought up. In the Oslo Peace Accords of September 1995, there was a joint decision by Israel and the PLO, controlled Palestinian Authority, sanctioned and agreed upon, witnessed by the international community, to establish joint industrial zones that abut the 1967, what was called the so-called Green Line. And there are a number of these industrial zones in which Palestinians earn 3.5 times, let me repeat, 3.5 times the monthly salary plus benefits plus insurance that they would, compared to what they would earn under the areas under Palestinian Authority rule. And therefore, in the Palestinian public is an unspoken, because the Palestinian media won't report it, but a real interest in working more and more for Israeli-owned and operated businesses, where Palestinians have told me personally in our research throughout Judea and Samaria in these shared industrial zones that they can only get paid a very respectful and honorable wage plus benefits in these Israeli-Palestinian companies. So yes, you're absolutely right, Josh. The Palestinian workers and managers in these companies are the first and foremost the folks that are going to get injured. Now, to short circuit what opponents of this idea would say, they would say, you know, Josh Haston, you know, Dan Diker, we know that in any revolutionary situation, people have to suffer in order to achieve their goals. That's what happened in apartheid South Africa, and that's what should happen now in terms of trying to starve and smoke out the settlements and cut off all economic links between the settlements and the Palestinian Authority. Well, the answer to that question is that you are working to kill peace, because the Palestinians know that in any future agreement, all of the settlement blocks are going to stay, and they are a matter of total 100% across the board Israeli consensus, meaning 85% of the Israelis that live in Judea and Samaria live in these larger blocks, these settlement blocks that are fairly close to the Green Line, and there is nearly 100% consensus among Israelis that that will stay. Those blocks, Josh, are the targets of the BDS people. It's not the small settlements with 15 families and 20 families and 30 families that produce wine and mezuzahs and candles for Havdalah on after Shabbat goes out. No, the people who they're hurting, the BDS people, are the Palestinians, the thousands of Palestinians that work in gainfully employed, skilled labor in these factories together with Jewish colleagues in peace, working in peace in these industrial zones. So that's what BDS is killing, is the economic peace and the economic social future of two neighbors that are supposed to live in peace and security. That is what we also uncover in BDS Unmasked.
There you have it, the reality of the BDS anti-Israel, anti-Semitic haters who don't really care about the Arabs living in this area. If they would, they would understand the ramifications for their actions. Now, that's going to do it for today. A up-to-the-minute report on the situation in northern Israel, Syria, Iran, situation between Israel and Russia, situation in Gaza, BDS, all in one short package. Thanks to Dan Diker, Senior Project Director, Program to Counter BDS and Political Warfare at the JCPA, the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. I want to thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, and Josh, and if you're, I'd be most delighted if listeners in your program would follow me at Dan Diker 84 on Twitter. I'm very active every day, bringing you really the latest and greatest regarding Israel and the Middle East and our friends across the seas in the United States and Europe.
I definitely endorse that. Follow Dan on Twitter. That's going to do it for today. My name is Josh Haston. This is Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. You can get in touch with me during the week, Josh, at thelandofisrael.com via email. Also on Twitter, at Josh Haston, and on Facebook, it's Joshua Haston. Thanks so much. From a, I would say, pretty cloudy and rather cold, chilly spring here in Jerusalem, Hope you're doing well in your part of the world. Most importantly, between now and when we talk again next week, be safe. Shalom from Jerusalem.